We got another day of NBA action. And with FanDuel, every night is a watch party. So it's time for your FanDuel crew to make their bets. So, what's the move tonight, gang? You know the new customers who bet $5 get $150 back in bonus bets? Woohoo! We're heating up, fam! Bet all the stars with all your friends and make every moment more, only on FanDuel. New customers bet $5, get $150 back in bonus bets. Make every moment more with FanDuel, America's number one sports book.
It goes down in the DM. It go down in the DM.
21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued is non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. He's the Hall of Famer. His name is Chris Carter. He goes by Nick Wright, and for the first time in a long time, we are all in the same place at the same time.
All right, let me check you out, Jenna. Let me just see. You got
alive.
Any grizzly bear
no
marks?
No scars, no marks.
Jenna was out on Nat Geographic in Yellowstone.
Yeah.
Traversing the Great West.
It was a work assignment, so
yes.
I can say.
Oh yeah, I should say that. It wasn't an extended vacation. She was on television on Nat Geographic.
It was
hanging
a great
out
time.
With grizzly bears.
I will tell you, I missed
she
you.
She was being compensated.
Yes. That's the Don Draper line. Where's the thank you? That's what the money's for.
I did miss you. The only sports I talked were Eagles and Bears, and
Jenna's been sitting on that joke for eight
long
days.
Long time. Hey, we got a big Friday show for you this morning. Last night there were
Hashtag she's sad.
But it wasn't corny. There were 12 NFL preseason games, a number of rookie debuts, but there was only one Baker. So let's start this morning with the much-hyped, much-anticipated preseason debut of number one overall pick, Baker Mayfield. Browns and Giants from MetLife last night, and those Cleveland Browns appear to have themselves a preseason quarterback controversy. Starter Tyrod Taylor was solid. Backup Baker Mayfield, also solid. Baker came in and tossed two touchdowns, going 11 of 20 for 212 yards. And Cleveland fans were oh so happy about what they saw, getting a quarterback for the first time in a very long time. CeCe, what impressed you most about Baker's debut? Saw you tweeting about it a lot last night.
Well, one thing we have to realize in trying to develop pro football players, a great debut is not typical of what happens, and especially from a quarterback, all the things that they have to be involved in. So I was impressed with a number of things. But if you start your career playing against the New York Football Giants, I played against the Giants a bunch of times, drafted by Philadelphia, just being in that stadium with that crowd in your debut, and you're used to going out there with the first unit. Oh, but you don't. Tyrod is the starter, and he starts off with a sensational, I mean, you can't start better than he started. And you have to sit there. You have to make sure you gauge your enthusiasm. You have to watch the coverages and everything. So his ability to be able to sit there as a superstar, Heisman Trophy winner, first pick in the draft, and be calm enough that he could come in and be very effective in the second, third quarter, that's the first thing. I know people won't be saying, oh, I didn't look at that way. But that's hard to do when you're a superstar player. But the way he ran the organization, you can see that the Browns and their future, it's going to be bright with Baker Mayfield. You can see why NFL franchise didn't want people to know, but this little guy can play pro football. He can throw the football. He was not a product of the system at Oklahoma. He has the arm strength. He has the type of leadership ability that people are gravitate to him. You can see him making tough throws on third down, not being able to step in, hitting the guy deep across the middle, getting rushed out of the pocket, being able to throw deep down the sideline,
right,
where only the wide receiver could get the football. I was very impressed at how he played quarterback. So that right there, he understood what his limitations were. When he had bad plays, he didn't allow those plays to turn into catastrophic plays. Man, the Cleveland Browns, man, you got to be happy with their overall selection after seeing him play a little less than two quarters now.
I try on show like this, where we talk every day, very often we talk about similar subjects day to day, and I try to be consistent. Yesterday, I said I wanted to see how he was getting his team in and out of the huddle. Were there delay of games? Did they look scatterbrained? Were they getting there in time? He gets check marks in the positive column on all of that. My second question was, would he cut and run too much? Meaning, when he saw a pass rush, would he simply say, I'm going to go try to get a first down with my feet, or I'm going to try to escape outside the pocket? I was so impressed with his ability in the pass rush to keep his eyes upfield and to find guys up the field. Like what you saw, we just, in that highlight package, there's a 3rd and 7 where he has a rush right at his face. He moves laterally to the downside of your screen,
yep.
Keeps his eyes upfield, stays in the pocket, hits a guy for a first down. The pass everyone will talk about today, not the touchdown to Njoku, but the one that ended up being reviewed. Now, he got outside of the pocket there, but he kept his eyes upfield instead of thinking, am I going to run? He was looking to throw, so he did cut and run a bit there, but he kept his eyes up the field to make an enormous play. Like, that really impressed me. Because we're going to talk about Lamar Jackson later in the show. I was impressed by Lamar. I thought he played well. But you also could see for him, if it gets hairy, I'm out. Like, I'm going to what I know. And I know they're different type of athletes with different strengths as far as passing the football. But even if you're trying to just nitpick, not a lot to nitpick from Baker after his preseason debut.
CeCe, you brought up patience, which is something that a lot of people watching the game last night would not have really looked for. The other thing I think I learned a lot out of you is comfort level. You know, because the game is so much faster when you're making that transition from college to the NFL. How comfortable did you feel like Baker looked in his preseason
debut? Well, I think that the Oklahoma staff that they currently have had Baker Mayfield more ready for the NFL than being a product of that system. So I think some of it is what they did at Oklahoma, absent of getting him snaps under center. But you got to give credit to the Cleveland Browns and their staff. Nick and I talked about it this morning, and Nick had picked it out. Man, their staff.
Todd Haley.
And how they facilitated. This is new. Hugh Jackson is used to calling plays, running the show. He surrendered that to Todd Haley, who's used to calling plays, and the overall prep, because Nick pointed out that not only Baker, but BP, if you get just consumed with looking at Baker, you'll forget how they played at quarterback. And their quarterback play was amazing.
How about Tyrod Taylor? I mean, he was the quarterback rating is an odd stat because a perfect score is 158.3. So, I mean, it doesn't sound like that should be the perfect score. Tyrod Taylor's quarterback rating, 158.3. That's what happens when you're 5 for 5, 20 yards per attempt, because he threw for 99 yards. Well, I mean, he was it. Listen, I thought Tyrod was an underrated player in Buffalo, but this was as sharp as I've seen him. And he was going up against Giants starters. Like, because when you're in that first, I understand the starters didn't play long, but he was out there for the first two drives. What you saw from Tyrod and then Baker, for the quarterbacks in the first 3-plus quarters of the game to combine to go 25 of 36, the Cleveland Browns quarterbacks, like, to me, that is a testament to the job Todd Haley, Hugh Jackson, and the entire coaching staff had them ready to go for.
So judging by what you saw from Baker last night, do you feel like he closed the gap between him and between he and Tyrod Taylor?
I think we'd be rushing if we just jumped to that conclusion.
Okay.
Tyrod Taylor, first of all, is one of there's 12 teams in the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
One of 12 quarterbacks to get his team in the playoffs. Now, of those 12 quarterbacks, if they were quarterbacking the Buffalo Bills, how much better would the Bills have been? So we got to give Tyrod a little credit for who he is and what he's going to do. And that's why the staff has been, you know, very, very emphatic about Tyrod is our starter. Baker Mayfield is the first pick in the draft. And he is a dude. And we always say this in NFL locker room, when a dude shows up, no matter what position, he's going to play. So Baker doing his part, Yes, it's ultimately, I said about six games before we saw this.
Yeah, does that number change at all in your head after last
night? It doesn't change at all because I believe the Browns are going to win some games. And it's hard to put Tyrod on the bench.
If they're winning.
Yeah. So they got a great situation. I believe that they improved their quarterback situation more than anyone in the NFL by trading for Tyrod and selecting Baker with that first selection.
As far as the timeline on this, I was talking with Pat Kerwin, who's a former NFL executive now in the media yesterday, and he brought up, I thought, a really good point about who's in charge of the Browns. So it's John Dorsey. So you guys know, because I brought this up a bunch, the last first-round quarterback to not play his rookie season, it's been a decade, it was Aaron Rodgers, the GM of the team, was John Dorsey. Now, I know Favre was there, so you might say, what does that matter? The quarterback that came the closest to breaking that streak was last year in Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes. The GM then was John Dorsey. I say that to say this.
Wow.
He has a history of, if we have, and they had more than competent quarterback play with Favre, obviously, but I'm not going to rush the first round pick onto the field. I'm not going to, because just because I picked the guy, because the GM is the guy that makes those picks, I'm not going to make the coach make the change. So I don't think there's no chance Baker sits the whole year. I don't think he sits till week 17, but it's not going to be the rush you might see with other organizations.
And the one thing we know in 2019 for the Cleveland Browns, Dorsey will be the general manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
We don't know who will be the head coach.
All right, Baker Mayfield with a very solid first preseason game. Coming up, let's talk about someone else who made a bit of a preseason debut. Andrew Luck's first NFL game in very, 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 very long time. That's next, First Things First. Back here, First Things First. We're going to get to Andrew Luck in a second. But first, check this out. Number two overall pick, Saquon Barkley, taking his first NFL touch, 39 yards, breaking three tackles in the process. See, how cool is this to watch?
Oh, this is what you're going to need to do, because the Giants ain't going to block nobody. That's the most impressive thing, making people miss. Now, that's the difference between the good running backs and the great ones. There wasn't no hole there. He made a hole.
Man.
Made them think he was going outside, jump cut, sticks it inside. Oh, no, if you can do that, you can be successful with that Giants line.
Who's supposed to be blocking that right side? Oh, yeah, that's our man, Eric Flowers.
Eric Flowers.
And moving over left side, right side. Hadn't found the spot for him yet.
You can't hide a sorry ball player.
On to Ravens quarterback, rookie quarterback, former Heisman winner Lamar Jackson. He had a better showing in this, his second outing. Jukes two defenders, and he gets himself into the end zone.
I mean, this is a dynamic play. It scares me because he's not the biggest fella, but, I mean, this is what you saw him doing at Louisville.
Watch number 93 right there. Ooh, he almost tore his ACL.
Yeah, I mean, he is, like you said yesterday about Saquon, he's going to come onto the field and be the best athlete among great athletes. He's going to be the fastest guy on every field.
Talking to Ozzie Newsome, they're very pleased with his overall development in his first two games in preseason.
All right, Steelers wide out. Juju Smith-Schuster absolutely mosses poor Rasul Douglas. Oh. Goes on to score a 71-yard touchdown.
I maybe call that a baby moss, like because the height of the jump. But I see what you're saying. They both went for it.
Yeah.
He went up and got it. Juju's going to be a happy man this year. Doesn't have Martavis Bryant chirping at him. He's out there. What up, C? You look a little skeptical.
That was pretty good, though, Jenna, because I thought for sure you were going to screw that up.
Because
deep down the sideline, Juju Smith-Schuster. You could have messed that up, Jenna.
But you
know what I'm saying. But you didn't.
But I didn't.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
The takeaway. I was waiting for the end of that thought.
You guys are talking over the best highlight we're going to have
Josh
all day.
Josh Allen, this was not his best highlight. Just playing himself like a rookie, poor little fella.
I mean, what's the plan, man? What are we doing? It ain't the University of Wyoming anymore.
It's a transition, Nick.
It ain't honorable mention Mountain West anymore.
He's making
Jenna,
his way
what
in.
Happens when the linebacker comes in?
This.
Blitzing.
This.
Remember,
it
off
makes
schedule.
You go off schedule.
Okay, so don't make the young people go off schedule.
Not yet.
Jenna Wolf hates when the veterans. Oh, Josh. Josh not ready for off schedule.
No.
I'm glad he recovered after this.
He had a beautiful 70-yard bomb, though, that was only 6 yards out of bounds.
Canadian football.
Canadian League, it would have been
Durant would have caught that.
Yeah, absolutely. Wider fields.
Here's who else made a much-anticipated debut last night. Andrew Luck, who had last played an NFL game 585 days ago. Colts, Seahawks. Luck came in, went 6 of 9 for 64 passing yards, but most impressively and most importantly, he went home healthy. Here's what Luck had to say after the game.
For a moment, there. I was like, okay, how do I approach it, especially as leading up to the game? Trying to control my emotions, and I just sort of said, screw it, I'm going to go out. Whatever I want to think and I want to feel, I'm going to feel it and let that happen. And it was a little bit like pressure was off of me in a sense, and I really had fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. And like I've told you guys earlier, I didn't quite know how much fun, if I would have this much fun again practicing football. I didn't know if I'd have this much fun again playing football. And it's a preseason game, you know, I'm not going to overblow anything or blow anything out of proportion, but it's still a game, and it's still a chance to go up against another color jersey, and it was a fun step along the way.
Good perspective there from Andrew Luck. Mm-hmm. What was your takeaway, C, from his first game since the 2016 season?
There's only a few men that can play this game, but after watching a few snaps, if I didn't, as Nick taught me this, mm-hmm. if I'm from outer space and I drop down, never seen football before, I've been like, is there a guy in the league that's going to throw the ball better than that? Read the coverage, pre-read, drop back, and as quick as he makes decision. That's what Mel Kiper fell in love with, but not only his arm strength, but his ability to diagnose plays and get the ball out of his hand. You can see the variety of throws. He's got a gun on him. He's got a perfect throwing motion, but his ability to understand what's happening and where the ball needs to go and the placement of that, that's what Andrew Luck did last night. And, man, the football is better when you got guys like this that can play the game at such a high level, because you don't have to have great receivers. You don't have to have great personnel. Like, you can run a lot of different offenses same way Tom Brady does. That's what you're going to see with Andrew Luck. I was happy to see him back out there and his perspective. As we saw and you pointed out with Tiger Woods all the time now, his perspective has changed. You can see that in Andrew Luck. And it was nice that he said, you know something, let's just forget all that worrying about this. I'm just going to let it go. That speaks to, too, not only his physical health being there, but his mental health being repaired and ready to continue a great career.
My biggest takeaway was stuff that happened after the game. So I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to key on something you mentioned. Because yesterday we talked a ton about you would be watching his throwing motion to see if it looked the same. To me, to my eye, it looked just like vintage Andrew Luck. To your much more trained eye, it wasn't any more looping. It was
And the velocity that you want, okay, that Andrew, you know that he has. The variety of throws that he can make, he seemed very, very comfortable in the pocket. Didn't seem like he was rushed. Now, we're still talking about a guy between a period of 2014, 2016, got hit more, dropping straight back than any quarterback in the NFL. I didn't see that. I didn't see him rushing because I've been hit so many times that he was comfortable and comfortable enough with his arm that he wasn't rushing his throws at the top of his drop.
All right, so my two biggest takeaways didn't involve any throw he made. One was his reaction to the one legitimate hit he took. He was happy and excited. He high-fived Jack Doyle, because what would an Andrew Luck game without being exuberant high-five with Jack Doyle? Yeah. And like, his reaction that I thought was great. It was almost like a welcome back to football moment, and he's excited. He's like, yeah, Jack. I mean, that's a play where they don't get a first down on a third and four.
And it's Bobby Wagner. Yeah. That's a real NFL play, a good reaction, and yes, you need to be able to check that box off as far as being able to
You move on, how important is it to take that first hit?
Well, I thought it was critically important for Luck, and then critically important for the college quarterbacks because in practice, you don't let them hit the quarterbacks, I should say.
Yes.
So these guys haven't gotten a hit since their bowl game, which is, you know, unless you're Baker Mayfield, that was probably in mid-December. And so for Luck, it's been even longer.
Right.
January 1 of 2017 was the last time he actually played in a football game. But my big takeaway is what we just played at the beginning of this. His legitimate childlike exuberance. And you guys know I'm not huge on the press conferences as much as other people are sometimes. But he has made a point to vulnerably tell everyone, I didn't know if this was going to be fun.
Yes.
I didn't know if I was going to have fun playing football. He had a quote
earlier. And that's very different than saying, I don't know if I'm going to play.
Because
he's like, I'm going to play, but I don't know how much.
I don't know how much fun it's going to be. Because I would imagine it wouldn't. If he was wondering, the only reason I could imagine if I'm going to play, but I don't know how fun it's going to be, is if he had concern, am I going to be the same guy?
Am I going, because that wouldn't be fun. If you were great at something, you're still in your prime, theoretically, and now you can't do it as high of a level, not only would that not be fun, it'd be demoralizing. It would be torturous. And so Luck just talking about the way he's talking, to me, speaks, oh, he thinks I'm back and healthy for the first time in a few years.
Back and healthy is one thing, but from watching it from your perspective, were you able to see glimpses of the Andrew Luck of old, or are we still in the process of that being developed to maybe get
to
that?
I mean, we still might have some setbacks. If he has a two-interception game, we'll be like, wow, is it the injury? That's just part of getting back. But he hadn't played an NFL game in 500 days. Yeah. And going against the Seattle defense, that they're going to put pressure on you. They're going to give you a variety of looks. They're going to be one of the top 10 defenses in the league. It's, yes, let's now he can move on. This is a pop quiz, all right? This is not a midterm exam, but you do get credit for those pop quizzes when you do. The preseason, you know what people are? The preseason is only good for people watching when people play bad. All right, when they play good, we try to act like the preseason don't matter. But the preseason is a critical part of developing professional football. That's the reason why they haven't blended those into the regular schedule. Remember the collective bargaining agreement? They tried to, we only knew two preseason games. No, there's a reason why we play four and sometimes five preseason games. They're very, very important. And the steps that Luck is making are very important also.
All right, we're going to talk a lot more about Andrew Luck. But coming up next, the Cam Newton-Kelvin Benjamin beef got taken to a whole nother level. We'll show you that next on First Things First. Time for stories to start your morning. Yesterday, we learned the Patriots are adding up to $5 million in performance-based incentives to Tom Brady's deal this season. They didn't need to do that, but they're doing it anyway. Nick, what do you make of this move by New England?
Of course, Brady deserves it, but my first reaction was, what was Rob Gronkowski's reaction? Like, now, he got some incentive extras last offseason, but he wants some guaranteed extras this offseason. Now, he's shown up to work. He's done what he needs to do. But I just imagine Gronk's like, hold up, they just given out money. Like, they didn't have to give Tom Brady that money. I would like that money, so I'm curious what Gronk's reaction was.
Yeah, Nick, you got to be careful and everything. That'd be just like if you go to Whitney, hey, man, I need some more money. Been like, man, we're going to give Chris some more money. I don't know if we got no change for you, little dog. Okay, porch puppy. All right, we hear you in that. But Brady, I mean.
This has been, by the way, Jenna, incentive. The theme of the week.
I mean, they should have just slid this a bag of money to
something
him.
Like that.
I mean, they should have just gave him a bag of money. Why does he need $5 million incentive to get the $19 million? How many quarterbacks are still going to be making more money than Tom Brady?
A lot.
After he's the league MVP?
A lot, but he's now $5 million closer.
Yeah, they
porch.
Don't make Tom mad, man. Okay. Keep him happy.
Okay.
Last night, the Cowboys opened up the preseason, taking on the 49ers. Ezekiel Elliott did not play. Dak Prescott did play. Dak went 3 for 3, 39 yards, including a nice 30-yard touchdown pass to rookie Michael Gallup. See, what did you take away from Dak's performance last night?
It was good to see. Dak did a great job. I was watching this game. Came on like 10 o'clock last night. So, man, we had to push it. But I want to see the Dallas Cowboys and see how they'd come out. That offensive line, you can see why they're so good. They get Zeke back in there rushing the football. But his overall decision-making was very, very good. The touchdown pass made a very good throw. Poor coverage by the cornerback there on the left side. But Dak is on the right track. It's an important season for him. Throwing the football, getting it to those other young wide receivers. Trying to solidify that passing game to go with that dynamic running game.
You mentioned poor coverage by the corner. You can see it there. The safety took a terrible angle, got blinded by the sun, something, because it looked like it could have potentially been broken up. But a very good pass by Dak. And, hey, maybe this is over-optimism. I know it's for week one preseason, but Michael Gallup, we've been saying who on the Cowboys possibly could be a big play receiver. We've seen mid-round rookies all of a sudden sometimes surprise you. It's one play doesn't make a season, obviously, but Michael Gallup, the rookie out of Colorado State, a good, obviously, first impression by him when the Cowboys are looking for playmakers on the outside.
All right, moving on. I love this. Fifth-round pick Shaquem Griffin made his pro debut with the Seahawks last night. Griffin led all players with 9 tackles, including 1 for a loss. His head coach, Pete Carroll, said Shaquem was all over the field making hits. See, what'd you make of Shaq's debut last night?
I'm really thankful that Seattle drafted him because they played a type of defense where guys are a little undersized, very, very fast, pursuing to the ball. He is perfect fit for pro football as a coverage linebacker. Also, a guy can play man-to-man on tight ends and running backs. He's going to close down space when you can run a 4-3. So very happy now that we've moved off from being more of a sentimental story to, man, this dude is a football player and a good one.
And here's the best evidence that he's a football player. There were 24 teams in action last night. You know how many defensive players had more tackles than Shaq Griffin? Zero. He had the most tackles of anyone that played football yesterday. That'd be great no matter who it was, considering it's a rookie. Now, playing time obviously contributes to that. Not everyone's playing as much as he played, but there was one series where he made tackles on four consecutive plays. Like, he wasn't having trouble wrapping up. He wasn't having trouble, like, with missed tackles. Mm-hmm. And so when you see he has a pick in camp, a couple forced fumbles, Ken Norton Jr., the D coordinator there, is speaking effusively about him. Like, this could be a really good story to go along with being a really good player.
And this is a defense that needs an influx of young talent.
And needs more speed. And he's a great athlete.
All right, finally, we've got second overall pick, Saquon Barkley, the New York Giants, on his very first professional touch against Cleveland, ripping off a 39-yard run, breaking three tackles, making it look easy. Nick, what did Saquon prove with his first pro carry last night?
Okay, I mean, this is going to sound hyperbolic, but I don't care. That one carry right there,
solidified.
That was, no, I'm not going to say it solidified it, but that one carry in and of itself, that was the patience of Le'Veon Bell and then the burst of Zeke. That was, I mean, L. Bell is, what makes him special is not his raw athleticism. Mm-hmm. It is his patience, his vision. Mm-hmm. He almost seems like he stops at times.
And yes.
Like, I will wait. I will. You all can keep running. I'm going to stop and look for the hole. Saquon did that because he didn't really have a hole. Like, I mean, that line was collapsed to a degree. He had to wait. And then the burst, I mean, oh, I find my hole, goodbye. And now they end up tracking him down, four guys pursue him to the sideline. But this is, I mean, you can't get a better opening carry than that. It is just one carry, but it'd be one thing if it was, oh, is it, you know, wide open hole, he goes through it. That's not that at all. For a lot of running backs, that's a 2-yard loss. And he made it a 39-yard gain.
The vision, the jump cut, the explosive ability, we know 4-3 speed, ability to bench press 400 and something pounds. And he has the combinations that we love to see, but his football instincts. What did I see in it? Big playability for the New York Giants, because that offensive line, they're going to miss some guys. The running backs, the good ones, all right? And the difference between them and the great ones is when there is no hole, what do they do? This is a 2-yard gain or a 0 gain at the line of scrimmage, and he makes it into 39 because of those attributes that you talk about. But the breakaway speed, if you can score from anywhere on the field, that's going to make a player special when he's at the running back. There's only a few running backs that have that type of speed. So I'm looking forward to building on what he did. That Giants line, not only Nate Solder being added to the left tackle, but you add a star running back, it's going to make that offensive line a lot better.
And how much is that going to help Eli Manning to have the comfort of getting Odell back plus being able to have that run game?
Well, and I think an improved Evan Ingram. This is a guy they spent a first-round pick on.
Last year's number one.
I think you could potentially have, and this is maybe assigning a little too much to Ingram, but you could potentially have three guys that are dynamic big play guys on the field at all points in time. Because your running back, your number one tight end, your number one wide receiver, it's not like those guys are coming off the field a lot.
Yes.
Like you, and so that can be tough for a defense to manage if you have three truly explosive players on the field at all times.
And people might be surprised by that. Nick Wright's not exaggerating in that. Ingram is going to be a star, especially Eli loves the tight end being able to go down the middle. When you have that run threat, it's going to help the tight end, it's going to help the quarterback, and it's going to help the kid with the gold hair.
Yeah.
All right, good stuff there out of Saquon Barkley.
It was yellow. It is a little goldish, right?
It's a little transitioning.
Oh, here we go.
All right, moving on to the Panthers and Bills. That's the smaller story. More interesting part was right here. Fireworks between former teammates Kelvin Benjamin and Cam Newton during pregame last night. Last week, if you'll recall, Kelvin Benjamin had some spicy comments about Cam's play, saying he was inaccurate and a bad fit. That led to Cam confronting him last night. Here's what Benjamin had to say about the incident after the game.
I mean, I was just moving on from it, I guess.
What did he say to you?
Huh. I mean, not serious, really.
What did you say to him?
Moving on from it.
It looked like you tried to walk away from him a few times.
Huh?
It looked like you tried to walk away from him a few times.
Yeah, just moving on from
him. You didn't want to get into it.
So. Yeah.
What was he trying to say to you?
I don't even know. I wasn't even trying to listen.
So we got a lot out of that interview there.
Yeah.
We really now know exactly what happened. Said nobody ever. Nick, what did you make of this?
Did you want to see? You look like you were about to say something, see, if you wanted to.
No.
Okay,
I'll follow
you'll wait? All right. I mean, what I make of what I saw there and on the field and in the interview is Kelvin Benjamin has no interest whatsoever in standing by what he said. He has no interest whatsoever in, I would say, owning up to the repercussions of nobody asked you to go out of your way to slam Cam Newton. Nobody asked you to go out of your way and say, I would have been better with any other quarterback in football. You did that. And I want to break down, like, really what we're seeing here. People should know the guy in the white is Thomas Davis. That's been a teammate of both of theirs for a long time. So Cam sees Kelvin Benjamin.
Former NFL man of the year.
A great man.
Great dude.
And so he sees Kelvin Benjamin already talking with Thomas Davis, and it looks like a Panthers equipment guy, staff, or whatever it is. Now Cam walks up on him, and Cam is a big guy, and he does get all up in Kelvin's personal space. And I would imagine it was because it looked like, if you look at the look on Cam's face in the beginning, it's something like, what were you saying? And then he flashes that $10 million smile and throws his hand up for some dap. And where it gets serious is when the camera pans here and you see Cam's hand is now extended in front. And he looks at his hand, sees Benjamin will not even shake his hand. That's when he says to Thomas Davis, no, we got to talk. And Cam puts his hands behind his back. So we're not going to get any confrontation here. But you won't even shake my hand? Wait, you won't even shake my hand?
Yeah, but why are you in my face, though?
Because you were talking wild about me to the media. Like, is that really how you feel? You feel I was the worst thing that ever happened to
you. Man, you better not be coming up in my face. You come all the way across the field. Like, there was a lot of different things Cam could do. Now, Cam is in the right here. But you don't get in anyone's personal space. All right?
He got a little closer.
He touched him. Mm-hmm. He touched him with his body. If someone on the street did this to you, you would feel uncomfortable.
Yes, if someone on the street, you feel a little different if it's someone you know and have a relationship
with. Well, this is the facts right here, all right? Kelvin Benjamin, after making the statement, he's already been reprimanded by the team. The general manager and the head coach got on him for bringing unnecessary attention before this preseason game. Because the thing about it was, he was getting ready. They were playing Carolina. So that led to the comments about Cam Newton. So he's already been reprimanded. There's not a lot that he can do. Obviously, because his soundbite from the interview, he said that I'm moving on. That was his only response because basically the team has told him,
right,
we want you.
We're moving on.
We're moving on from this. Now, Kelvin Benjamin, to me, he talked about Cam as far as what Cam knew as far as football. Him explaining himself, he didn't do a good job of that. Cam was not right in coming across the field and invading his personal space. Bad things can happen. I've tried to tell you how NFL locker rooms work. We saw with OBJ how it escalated from on the field in warmups till in the game where they end up fighting on the field. So, Kelvin Benjamin, you can have whatever opinion you want about what he said about Cam. But when Cam, who is one of the 32 starting quarterbacks in this league, he is a former MVP, when you walk across the field, invade another person's personal space, all right? Cam was not right in doing that.
Okay.
Now, talking to him, addressing, but you do not make body contact with another human being, all right? You wouldn't do it in an office. You wouldn't do it out on the street. So why are you doing that to me?
The reason that I would say why are you doing that to me, because it's not, as you say all the time, it's not a regular office, and it's not out on the street. And
I've been in that office. Don't touch me.
Okay, that's fine.
So it's not like we're guessing on that.
Absolutely. But even having been in that offense, or that office, pardon me, in any walk of life, there is few things you can do more disrespectful than someone trying to shake your hand and you will not shake their hand. That is something you do to someone you have so little regard for and so much disgust for. I see people, I don't want to say on a regular basis, but somewhat often, that I, like, either because of who they are professionally or who they are personally, I'm not big fans of theirs. But if they try to shake my hand, I'm not going to walk by him. I'm not going to keep my hands back.
I think this is a little bit different. I think this is far more explosive. The words that he said about Cam, when you are a black quarterback, that's the last thing you want to hear is you don't know football like some other guys know, who most of them are white.
Of course, which is why I understand why Cam would want to go talk to him about it.
Talk to the equipment people. We meet the other players on the team all the time. We know where their buses are coming in. You do not have to do it on the field. We exchange autograph. We exchange numbers. A lot of times, it's not on the field. If I wanted to get him and get his attention and talk to him, there's other ways
to
do it.
Especially with cameras everywhere.
But Cam didn't know that it was going to go like this. Cam is smiling, trying to shake his hand.
You know what? What Cam knew, if he would have stayed on that side of the field, he would have known exactly how it had gone.
Of course. But I don't blame Cam for wanting to address. We want to find out, hey, man.
But there's other ways to address it.
But can't I make the argument that with Thomas Davis there, who we both talked about who he is, that is actually a better time than when you're both away from everything if it does get explosive. Like, Thomas Davis is there. He walks over. I agree you shouldn't have bumped him. But if
he told Thomas Davis to leave. Once, so your security blanket, he told him, shoe fly.
Right, because.
Shoe fly, correct. I got this.
Because once he would.
Thomas Davis is the senior guy.
Yes. But he didn't tell him shoo until he saw this guy won't even shake my hand. Okay. When Cam realized
he wasn't going to shake his hand, Cam should have walked away. Because nothing good could come after that. If it's so disrespectful, not getting you, Cam should have analyzed that. Then, okay, what good could come after that?
And he eventually does, about 40 seconds later. We just saw it there, and he finally waves him off. He's like, all right, forget it.
And this is my whole problem with the situation. I think that you don't realize. I just hold Cam to a higher standard. Then I hold Kelvin Benjamin to. Kelvin Benjamin, he had already messed up. And the organization, who is cutting his check, that's the most important thing right there. It's not how that football player feels about me. It's how does my general manager and how does my head coach feel about me when I leave this field?
So let me ask you this, because you're a guy that people held, even though you weren't a quarterback, they held Chris Carter to a different standard than they'd hold other people. At what point do you stop being Chris Carter the idea, the brand, and become Chris Carter the man, where I cannot
be disrespected
like this.
It's not going to be somebody saying, ha, he doesn't know football. You know the reason why? Because I know more football than that guy. And every time I go out there, I prove it to be true.
Absolutely.
I'm beyond all that, man. I'm not going to lose my job or my status in life by confronting a guy in the NFL that I know. Man, you could get sucker punched. Walking up on NFL guys like that. That I know and that I respect. I respect his personal space, even though he might have said that about me. I'm bigger than that, man.
I just feel like what that's like.
I hold one of the most precious trophies that's ever been given out in that league. You know what that is? That's the most valuable player. In this season, who was the baddest dude ever? And in that season, I could read the coverage and you wasn't there and I benefited the most with you being on the bench. I'm bigger than that. I'm bigger than that. And that's what I expect from Cam Newton.
Well, that is the last time I'm going to chest bump Nick when I say hello in
just,
the morning.
Just shake my hand.
No, I thought the chest bump was working for us. Hand. Now I feel like it's not.
I walk past people every day, and they know they ain't getting no handshake.
Well, that's...
You know that.
Yes,
coming
you know
up.
People you know.
No.
That's people... Hey, Chris Carter.
Dez. Ryan actually warming up to the Browns. That's next on First Things First. We are back here in First Things First with Super Bowl champ Chris Canty, and CeCe's getting all up
in
his face.
There you go, CeCe. You want the Browns out?
All up in his face.
Don't nobody
want to hit me with the Cam.
The difference between this and that is Cam's got a little bit of size on Kelvin Benjamin. Ain't nobody got a little bit of size on Chris Canty.
That's a good point.
Man, why do you think I shake your hand so often? Just in case I don't miss one.
Just to keep everything cool, right? Just to keep everything cool. This is where we're at.
He needs some security up in the Red Rooster tonight.
Just a little bit.
All right.
About that rooster, CeCe. Come on now.
Chris Canty, let's talk some Dez Bryant, who, with the preseason now underway, remains unsigned. Yesterday, reports surfaced that Dez was not returning calls from the Browns about coming in to try out for their team. But Dez did hop on Twitter because it seemed more efficient, apparently, than just answering his phone. And he tweeted, quote, starting my visits next week, I'm coming to the land to see you, Mr. Dorsey. All right, Chris Canty, would Dez be a good fit in Cleveland? Let's start there.
Gentlemen, the more and more I think about it, the more I'm coming around on the idea that Dez Bryant might be a fit for the Cleveland Browns. And I say that based on what I saw last night in the preseason game. From a football standpoint, some of the concepts that Hugh Jackson and Todd Haley want to involve in the offense, the back shoulders to Rashard Higgins, the slant route to Antonio Callaway, those are pass routes, concepts that Dez Bryant can do in his sleep. And so when you start to think about the element of having a big body receiver outside of the numbers, they don't have that guy on their roster personnel-wise. They just don't. They don't have big receivers. Jarvis Landry is not a big guy. What they're trying to do with Antonio Callaway, he's not a big guy. He's 5'11". They need somebody that's a big body target outside of the numbers for their quarterbacks. Tyrod Taylor, Baker Mayfield, they're not big guys in stature, so sometimes you're going to have to be able to put some touch on the ball, loft it outside of the numbers. Dez Bryant is the guy that can go up and make the play on those 50-50 balls. So from a football perspective, makes a lot of sense. The other thing that I like about Dez Bryant going to Cleveland is even though he's temperamental and you worry about him being a negative influence on the quarterback, Dez Bryant has always been a top competitor. And that's the one thing that Hugh Jackson and John Dorsey are trying to do with that culture in the Cleveland Browns organization. They want guys that love to compete. And Dez Bryant loves to compete. So I like that element of having him with that organization.
You were mentioning some of the things Dez tweeted yesterday. What I read on Twitter is the only reason that I wouldn't want him on the team. And the only reason it has nothing to do. All your football points are A-plus as always. And you're right. Like what you saw, the offense they're running, with what Todd Haley's done with somewhat mercurial wide receivers, all these things. But, man, I read a John Dorsey quote yesterday saying, we'd love to have Dez in if he'd answer the phone. I can't get him on the phone. Dez then, somebody basically relayed that to him via Twitter, an NFL reporter. Dez said, you're lying. And then about 2 hours later said, scheduled to go to Cleveland while he's live tweeting that game. Then he also was tweeting about.
There's a tweet in between, which I was also alarming, that I'm going to visit teams when I'm right.
When I'm right. I've played with a broken foot. I wanted to take this offseason, spend time with my family and get my body right, which in and of themselves are all fine, but in its totality, and even with the Browns, he's like, I wouldn't mind playing for Cleveland. Like, this is, again, you got to recognize where you are in life, have CeCe's favorite phrase, self-awareness, and it's not about, this ain't Baskin Robbins for you anymore. You don't have 31 flavors. You might be down to a couple. Like, vanilla's considering you, and chocolate might make a phone call. Like, and so that concerned me. Like, I scrolled through his whole timeline yesterday, and that concerned me, and Dorsey saying, I can't get him on the phone. Like, what you doing, man?
When I look at Dez's career, and I'm pulling for Dez to be able to get on a team and to be able to show his skills. After this weekend, seeing one of my former teammates inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, it took me back to remember. I remember about halfway through Randy's career, people had given up on him. Before that, he had gone to Oakland. Before he had gone to New England, he'd gone to Oakland. Two bad years. Randy Moss is done. He's washed up. Terrell Owens, Hall of Fame this weekend. Early in his career, had some success. Then people midway gave up on him. And then he was able to come back a couple more times after that. Dez Bryant, if he was able to fall in love with working out, because as you can see, T.O. after inducted, wherever he did it in Tennessee, he worked out for Saskatchewan of the CFL
the next day
on Sunday for the head coach and general manager there. Randy Moss, I saw him this past weekend. He could still run a go route. He's in great shape. They're phenomenal athletes, but they both were in love with working out. I would challenge Dez Bryant. Man, I would go to Cleveland. They got a good quarterback situation. The wide receiver coach is very, very good. And Todd Haley and the job that him and Hugh are doing, that's where I would chance my next career move if I was Dez. I would go to Cleveland. I wouldn't be thinking about all the other stuff. He needs a fresh start, a lot like these guys did. Now, the difference is, these guys are workout phenoms now. Mm-hmm. They love to run and take care of their body. And now, if Dez said he was having some injury issues, that his body was bothering him a little bit, that was hindering his training, I just use those two examples because I still believe that it's possible. But it is go time right now, all right? You can't afford to miss the whole preseason and expect to be able to take up where you left off 2015. It wasn't like you had a great season last year. Yeah, right. So I would give the Cleveland Browns a chance because I believe in what they're doing, and they have arm talent to be able to get the football to multiple weapons.
And, CeCe, you're hitting the nail on the head when you're talking about the concerns with Dez Bryant, because when you start to decline with overall athleticism as you get older, you have to make sure that you work out harder. And
yes.
The fact that Dez Bryant is saying, I'm not going to go into training camp and join a team until I'm ready, to me that implies that he hasn't been necessarily taking this time away from the game to make sure that his body is in top condition and focusing on all the little things that he needs to improve on so that he can go into training camp as well conditioned as possible and getting ready to play football in the regular season. Because a lot of guys think that they're in good shape until they get to football camp, to get their training camp, and then they realize they're not in football shape. So with Dez Bryant, that's the one thing I worry about, because it doesn't get easier as you get older to get in shape.
Either that or while he was training, because he was released a long time ago. He injured himself. Now, that's the only thing. I'm willing to throw Dez an olive branch. Either he injured himself or it's the situation that Canty points out.
Because he wasn't injured when the Cowboys cut him. Like,
injured to the fact that
they'd fail him on the physical.
Absolutely. There you go.
It's a different distinction. You got to take an entrance physical and an exit physical. And so, like, he was not injured to the point to where he had any, released failed physical, anything like that. So that doesn't mean he didn't get dinged this offseason. And maybe he just means I needed rest and recuperation from 8 years in the NFL. But he also said, I got 3 years left. Like, that's an odd thing to put out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's an odd thing for a guy in this era at that position whose peak was, I understand his peak was 3 years ago, but his peak was as high as it was to say, oh, yeah, I got 3 years left. Like, why are you putting out there you think you only got three more years of football when you're not on a team right now? Mm-hmm. That doesn't make sense to me either.
My red flag was what you both mentioned. If you're looking for a place to land, the last thing you want to do is have question marks surrounding you, which is either if it's injury or if you're not right or if you're not ready to play or if you're not in shape. If barring an injury, get yourself in shape unless you're injured so that when the call does come in, you're on borrowed time now. You have a couple more weeks until things really get moving. You're into the preseason.
And you got to learn the system.
And you got to learn the system. But thinking about where Dez Bryant is, he's going to have to take a one-year deal. Hopefully he'll be motivated, he'll have something to prove, and that will be the difference in terms of him being able to get things back on track and him be that productive receiver that we've seen in the past.
All right, let me ask you both a question, though, about what John Dorsey said, because I'm not trying to harp on it, but I think it's meaningful. I understand everyone at this table has an agent, like every pro athlete essentially has an agent. The agent negotiates contracts. This guy calls you, call my agent to discuss it. I get that. But what do you make of a guy not answering a call from the GM, even if it's a brief conversation, even if it's a get-to-know-you conversation? Like, if someone, what am I making too much of it?
Any team or network, no, call Chris Carter first. Don't call his agent, because the agent worked for me.
Right.
All right? I make everything happen. I don't know how Dez is running this business, but everything should be going through him.
Right.
I don't
know
that.
At least the introductory conversation. Like, the conversation of, hey, we want to bring you in, even if it's as much as, okay, it's great talking to you.
I know what John Dorsey wouldn't do. He wouldn't put the message out there that he had not communicated with Dez Bryant, and Dez wouldn't get back to him if that hadn't happened.
Right, it would be a bizarre thing to lie about.
Yeah, John Dorsey's a stand-up guy. So the fact that this is out there, that actually happened, it's a head-scratcher, no doubt, about Dez Bryant not picking up the phone.
It is. For a guy desperate to land on a team, to take it for granted that you have a general manager that's
And by the way, he also tweeted, my visits start next week. So maybe he's got
a whole bunch of teams.
And he's just been keeping it from us. I don't know.
Chris Caney, stick around. Coming up, did Baker Mayfield take his first step towards winning the starting job out in Cleveland? That's next. This is First Things First. Back here on First Things First with Chris Caney. Get back to last night's action. Number one overall draft pick, Baker Mayfield's NFL debut. Baker went 11 for 20 for 212 passing yards and two touchdowns in two quarters of play against the New York Giants. Chris Caney, what did you make of Baker's performance last night?
I don't think it was anything short of outstanding. I mean, when you looked at what Baker Mayfield did and just his his understanding of the offense and what Todd Haley wants to do, and then his poise to be able to execute, especially in situational football, right? So he had led two scoring drives on the six possessions that he was actually in the game. Mm-hmm. That first scoring drive, 14 plays, 72 yards. You look at the third and 18, they ran a TT stunt up front. Guy came free. Yes. Baker didn't step out. He stepped up. He was able to drive the ball down the field on that deep dig. They converted on that play. Ultimately got him down into the red zone. He had a scramble on third down. They extended the drive. He had to scramble on fourth down, extended the drive. Then the touchdown pass to David Njoku, right? The defensive back on the tight end's back, and then the linebacker with his back turned. Baker put the football only where his guy can get it. And those things, when you start looking at those intangibles and having a feel on being able to do that this early in his NFL career, I think those are things that translate into having success as a starting quarterback sooner rather than later. So I was impressed by it.
The thing that I like is not one gimmick. I'm talking about all pro football, either formations. It wasn't something that they had either tricked up.
Like didn't look like Oklahoma.
No, but I give Oklahoma and their coach there to develop his skill set, because typically coming out of that Big 12, those offenses, the quarterbacks put up tremendous numbers, but it doesn't transfer over. I saw last night a guy that it would take a month worth of video of a rookie quarterback to get all the types of throws that he did. The touchdown pass, over the zone coverage, into two guys converting in the back, throwing it between three guys.
Yep.
All right? Where it's the back of the end zone. So where are you missing the back of the end zone? You either miss real, real low or you miss high. That's a rookie quarterback who knows that. The third down, the TT stunt, flushes him out where he's able to come up where they wanted him to flush out. No, on the third down conversion, getting out, protecting himself on the sideline, not being cavalier where the guy tried to take a little shot at his knee, bailing out of the pocket to the right, the deep throw down the sideline where only his wide receiver can catch it, had to go to review to be overturned. The variety for which of things he did, that's why you come to the conclusion, Canty, man, this was a great performance by a rookie on the biggest of stages. And I keep telling, the preseason football, you know when it's only time it counts? When you play bad. Then it's like, oh, man, he played terrible. We try to act as if
we minimize it when guys play well. It's a totally fair critique of us in the media that we when guys play poorly, it's the end of the world. When guys play well, that's the preseason.
The preseason is not NBA Summer League and it's not NBA preseason games because of the physicality of it. So we have to give him the proper credit.
I knew he could make the throws. So that's not the part that I'm going to key on. It was good to see him make the throws, but you don't set the all-time passer rating record in consecutive seasons if you can't make basically every throw. I wanted to see how he dealt with the rush. Mm-hmm. If he went to, oh, there's a rush, let me get out of the pocket. There's a rush, let me put my head down. And the play that most impressed me is the one you keyed on, the third and 18. Not because he converted it, but because he gave himself the opportunity to convert it.
Yes.
The third and 7 when he rushes to the outside and keeps his eyes up the field, that's a great play. But the third and 18 where he steps right into it.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell by the way they're running that defense is, and tell me if I'm getting over my skis here, but they know that the defense knows where the sticks are, but they also think that by the time, if he scrambles, by the time the receiver comes across, we'll be there. The only way you can make that throw is if you don't scramble outside, you step up and you get to the weak spot of the zone. That's a veteran play. It's a veteran play. People say one of the best things about Tom Brady, I've heard one of his coaches say this, is his mobility. Mm. And people are like, the hell are you talking about? He has like 4 rushing yards a season. It's his mobility in the pocket, stepping
yes.
up, mm-hmm. stepping to the side. And you saw some of that from Baker yesterday. I didn't anticipate that. I thought when he got rushed, he would try to escape, and instead he did. I thought he was great in that regard.
What about the two things that you really can't learn? Which is patience and comfort. He seemed to have both of those things out there, which, as CeCe says all the time, is just so rare for a young guy coming out of college and just learning the game to look like he wants to be there, he belongs there, like the game is slow enough for him to really master.
No, you're right, Jenna. He was poised, and he did have control of the huddle. And Nick, that was one of the things we talked about yesterday, just being able to operate the offense.
Get it in and out
of the huddle. You know, making sure you avoid the delay of games, the pre-snap penalties, making sure that the cadence, the checks at the line of scrimmage, all of that stuff was clean. And that's exactly what you saw last night from Baker. In the 6 possessions that he was in there, that was a productive offense. And you see he was able to put together those 2 scoring drives. And CC, one of the throws that we didn't talk about was the slant to Antonio Callaway.
Oh,
he put it in front of the receiver and down where he could can make a play. And you know when you're throwing the ball in the middle of the football field, that has to be down. Otherwise, you run the risk of getting it tipped.
I love the fact that you bring that up, because in that, they were in tight man-to-man coverage. And the quarterback is taught either to hit the wide receiver either out of the break, because the inside coverage, either a linebacker or a safety, is going to be taking that flat receiver. And if you don't hit him right out of the break, there's a chance for an interception. He didn't hit him out of the break. He waited until he got in the second hole. And, man, he fired. And I said on the end zone shot, you miss a guy in the end zone, either low or high. If you miss a guy in third down, you miss him low on a slant. And that's where he missed him, which led to the touchdown. So,
and do you think he missed him, or was he leading him?
I thought he was leading him a little bit.
Well, when I say miss, I always talk about like golf shots. Like, where do I want to miss it? I'm not going to miss it behind him. I'm going to miss it low and in front of him, even though it was targeted on. Because when I say that.
I got you. You mean it wasn't a perfect.
You see that? You see the DB?
I see exactly what you. Yep.
And but that's when I saw that, I thought of a quote that from you that I never forget and changed the way I watch how quarterbacks throw and evaluate quarterbacks. Does the ball speak to you? Like that was, you said, when you're playing with a good quarterback, where he places the ball, he's
telling
you.
Excuse me, I don't make that sound too often.
No, but he's telling you, you got
green grass in front of you.
Green grass in front of you.
And I got a man in bump and run, so I know if he undercuts me, they got one high safety. He's throwing it in front of me. He's letting me know where I'm supposed to go next.
I do want to ask you, Chris, about Tyrod Taylor, who he himself had a great game last night. It's not the light bulb went off, it's going to be Baker. I mean, there's a bit of a controversy situation in Cleveland. Both guys went out and had solid performances last night.
I don't think it's a controversy. I think Tyrod is their starting quarterback, and Hugh Jackson has been clear about that. And the Cleveland Browns can't afford to mess up and make a mistake on another first-round pick at the quarterback position. So they're going to give Baker as much time as he needs. So when he goes under center as the starting quarterback in the regular season, that he is as prepared as he possibly can. Because once you go to Baker Mayfield, if he struggles, you can't go back to Tyrod Taylor. So they're going to allow Tyrod to start out the season. And I think right now, Tyrod gives them the best chance to win. And nobody knows that more than the other 52 guys on that team.
Yeah, I haven't heard a better example of why Baker Mayfield's going to play than Nick told me. So Nick changed my thought, because I thought Halloween, here comes Baker Mayfield.
What CeCe's talking about is why it might be longer than people expect. The last rookie quarterback to not play, first-round pick, was Aaron Rodgers. It's been a decade, not play at all his rookie year. The GM there was John Dorsey. The quarterback that came the closest to breaking that streak was Pat Mahomes last year, didn't play until week 17. The GM was John Dorsey. The GM and the guy that selected Baker Mayfield is John Dorsey. He has shown a propensity. He will be patient. He will not force the head coach to go with.
And he also traded.
Right.
For Tyrod.
He traded for Tyrod.
Yes.
And he will not force the head coach. And he knows as well as anybody that while John Dorsey's got a lot of job security, Hugh Jackson does not. Like, the wins are important. And right now, as great as Baker was yesterday, right now Tyrod's the better player.
Yep.
And I also think in Cleveland, we have to recognize when we evaluate both these guys, but Tyrod, because we've seen him as a pro before, how much better is Tyrod going to be with what I believe to be the best offensive coordinator he's ever had? I think Todd Haley, you can't look at these two quarterbacks combined to go 25 of 36. And just like
good point there.
Just like we only talk about preseason mattering when guys play poorly, we typically only talk about coaching mattering when coaches stink or when they screw something up. Todd Haley has raised the tide of the offense everywhere he's been. And Steelers have all that talent. They were better with Todd than without Todd. Like, Todd Haley.
He added on to what Bruce Arians was already doing and being successful.
And I think Todd Haley is going. We're going to see the best of Tyrod Taylor, however long he gets to be the quarterback, which might be longer than most people expect.
All right, we've got to take a break there. Chris, we'll see you a little bit later on in the show. Still ahead, Vince Carter joins us live. That's coming up. Woo-hoo. First things first. All right, we're going to get to Kevin Durant in just a second, but first, Ravens rookie quarterback and former Heisman winner Lamar Jackson. He get a better showing in this, his second outing. Jukes a couple of defenders, gets himself into the end zone.
Lamar's the only quarterback in the league that can make this play.
Watch 93. Watch out. Almost lost his kneecap right there. Cutbacks on him. Ozzie Newsome like how he's progressing as a quarterback.
Steelers wideout, Juju Smith-Schuster, just mosses poor Rasul Douglas. Goes on to score a 71-yard touchdown.
And I was worried about Juju right there.
where you see, like, the defender almost fall right on his Achilles. He ends up, I mean, he makes the great play and then goes to the house. He's going to be important for them this year, more important with the loss of Martavis Bryant. That's a good pick out of USC a couple years ago.
Wouldn't be surprised if he passed 1,000 yards this season.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
I'd be surprised if he passed 4,000 yards this
Allen.
Season.
Josh Allen. Yikes. Played like a rookie last night, but that's because he's a rookie.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Rocket arm. Even throwing backwards, evidently.
He had a couple of big throws. Not all of them
Is
were
he still 6'5 when he's laying down? I don't know.
Hey.
I don't know.
Where did he play football?
Wyoming. I just loved watching the draft. It was like, go ahead, see.
Last night he called his mom and said, Mom, it was some brothers chasing me. What, you got brothers in the league? No, you don't have no brothers. You're the only. No, no, Mom, it was some brothers. They wasn't in Wyoming.
We're not in the Mountain West anymore.
Time now for In or Out. Back-to-back finals MVP Kevin Durant has a knack for getting to the rim, and Warriors teammate Andre Iguodala say KD is, quote, the most talented scorer of all time. Oh. C, are you in or out on Durant being the best scorer of all time?
I love Kevin Durant, but all time, come on, Iggy, like, just stop.
Chill
like,
out.
I know, yeah, like, gee, Michael Jeffrey Jordan, not only the greatest basketball player, but if you need a bucket, one bucket in any game, get that dude the ball right there because he can get it done. All right?
Iggy said a bunch of interesting things this interview. One of them was Kevin Durant can give you 30 points on 12 shots. Do you know how hard that is? I actually do know how hard it is, Iggy, which is why Kevin Durant has never done that in his entire career. LeBron did it on 11 shots once, by the way, but that's neither here nor there. Listen, KD could get on this corner one day. But the four, he's not in the top four right now. People conflate scorer and shooter. The four greatest scorers ever, you can pick the order, are Wilt Chamberlain, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Michael Jordan, and LeBron James. Those are the four greatest scorers ever. Now, is Durant fifth? Is Elgin Baylor fifth? Is Kobe Bryant fifth? All those guys are in the argument, but he's not there yet. He's tracking towards being on, like you were saying, he's in the same zip code. He ain't on the block yet. And so let's all just pump the brakes.
That was a good list, and I don't like lists.
Yeah, that is a good list, right? I spent a lot of time thinking about this last night.
All right, let's move on to football.
For those 30 seconds, I spent 2 hours researching. I'm like, should Elgin be on there? I'm not sure. Go ahead, sorry, Jenna.
But you enjoyed it.
I love it.
That's the thing. It wasn't work for you. Two-time MVP Aaron Rodgers has made his career with that arm strength. Former teammate Martellus Bennett said, quote, no one has more arm talent than Aaron. So, Nick, are you in or out on Aaron Rodgers having the most talented arm in the NFL?
I'm in. And you could ask me this question anytime in the last 6 years, I'd have been in. I'm absolutely in. It's an easy answer. You can make every throw from every angle to anybody. I am absolutely in.
On schedule or off schedule, right?
Doesn't matter.
On schedule, off schedule. I caught balls his first practice when he was a starting quarterback, when Brett Favre was yo-yoing going back and forth. Greg Jennings and I stunned, and I was like, this is very, very special. Besides Dan Marino, that guy right there, Aaron Rodgers, man, best all time.
But did you know that when you were catching the balls that day? Could you tell?
Absolutely, I could tell.
Good.
Yes.
Guy's unbelievable.
It spoke to me.
There you go.
In English.
Came in differently.
In English. Ravens rookie quarterback Lamar Jackson.
Kind of like the dude on Canal Street, but
a little bit different.
Yeah. Okay. In his second NFL game last night, this one against the Rams, Lamar finished 7-for-18, 119 yards, had a highlight reel 9-yard touchdown run. CC, you in or out on Lamar being the Ravens' best option at quarterback?
I got to be out on that because I realize that a lot of things are going to happen. There's a lot of parts of pro football that he is really not up to speed on yet. Baltimore, talk to Ozzie Newsome. They're very pleased with how he is developing, but no, I got to be – Flacco is the best for Ravens right now, all right?
I'm taking the longer view of this. And I think he's the best option for the Ravens now because it will help him become the guy he needs to be quicker. I need him to get first-team practice reps. I need
him to see live bullets. So you're like, he's definitely going to be starting next year?
Exactly right.
So getting some experience.
And I don't think the Ravens are a playoff team, no matter what they do at the quarterback position this year. So if this is a building year anyway, and Ozzie Newsome knew that in his last draft trading back in to get Lamar, it's not just about the game reps. You've told me. The practice reps matter. I want him getting as much first-team reps as possible, so I'm in on this.
And Flacco's out of guaranteed money, so
after this
now
year,
would
absolutely.
Be the time.
Yep.
All right, we will end with free agent Dez Bryant. Yesterday, reports surfaced he was not returning calls from the Browns, but Dez tweeted, quote, starting my visits next week, I'm coming to see the land to see you, Mr. Dorsey. So, CC, are you in or out on Dez being a good fit with the Cleveland Browns.
I'm in, and it's based on Dorsey's also looking for a wide receiver, so it says something about Josh Gordon. Will he be available? So they don't have the big physical guy. I believe Jarvis Landry can be great inside or outside. He's better inside. Dez is strictly an outside guy. He would be a great fit. And then Callaway, if he can stay out of trouble, yeah. I believe he gives them the deep threat and that little wiggle to make them very, very a good wide receiving core.
For all those football reasons, I understand. But add Dez Bryant to the list. Dez Bryant, Kevin Durant, the president, folks, they'd be so much better off they just delete their damn Twitter
Seriously.
Accounts. Like, I mean, if I wasn't following Dez on Twitter yesterday, I might feel better about this. But I was, and so I can't. I'm out. Like, I'm just flatly out. Like, I'm watching him. He's just acting a fool on Twitter. This is the reason that right now you're unemployed. You still can't play football. But I, with that, with Todd Haley there, who can be a little volatile, even though I think he's really good, Baker Mayfield, I think they have a good thing going in Cleveland. I don't want to upset the equilibrium. So for that reason, I'm out.
All right, got to take a break. Coming up,
they
though, future basketball Hall of
years.
Famer Vince Carter
what
joins
kind of
us live next.
They got?
Knockout rounds begin at the Junior NBA World Championship with the quarterfinals today on FS1 and streaming live on the Fox Sports app. Eight-time All-Star Vince Carter is part of the coverage. He's nice enough to join us now. Vince, thanks so much for being with us. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, let's talk about your experience as an analyst for that, for the Junior NBA World Championships. How's it been so far?
Well, first of all, I'm still stuck in basketball mode. Typically, I get to the gym early to work on my game, to get started, get my day started, well, my evening started before some of the younger guys. And this is none the same. I get here a little early.
First one here. I love it.
Well, there was a really cool moment.
But no, this has been great.
Sorry to interrupt you, Vince. There was a really cool moment that I want the audience to be able to see of you surprising the Canadian national team earlier in the week. Let me play this clip, then I want to ask you about it.
Excuse me, guys. Excuse me, real quick, if you don't mind.
Whoa.
If you don't mind. How you doing?
We're good.
Everybody good? All right. I heard you guys were playing a game today, so I figured I'd come in and say hello. You doing all right? Somebody say something, man. You're making me nervous here.
Hello.
All right. There you go. All right. No, how cool is that, man? Wow. Holy smokes.
Vince, they couldn't even talk. They were speechless. What was
man,
that moment
was,
like?
I know, that was the problem. I mean, when it was brought to my attention, obviously I knew I had Canada, and they said, hey, we got an idea, and I was like, let's do it. And I wasn't really sure how the reaction would go. I mean, obviously, it can go one of two ways, or three ways. It's either they're speechless, they go crazy, or they're like, oh, okay, cool. So I was just hoping that they would appreciate it, which they did. It was just funny. So that's why I was like, man, y'all making me nervous. Say something. And so I was shaking the guy's hand and everything, and the coach said, shoot, please don't forget the coaches and whatnot. So it was a great moment. And I actually talked with them after the game in private. They had a tough loss, didn't play well. So I just sat there and just talked to him and just had, we had some motivational time and guys kind of got some things off the chest and, you know, tried to refocus to get ready for tournament play.
Yeah, it's a long tradition there in Canada, the impact that you've had on basketball there. I'm very, very fortunate that our career paths crossed. My brother was coaching there in Toronto, developing you. You and I were working out together there in South Florida. You swore up and down I was trying to kill you or make you into an NFL linebacker.
I remember that, I remember that like it was yesterday.
I was just trying to make you a little faster.
Conditioning and whatnot. I was like, man, look here, man, I'm trying to jump up in the air. I'm not trying to outrun people.
Now, Vince, how do you do it at this, even an advanced age? You talk about getting to the gym early. You've always had a tremendous work ethic and a regimen. But right now, man, what motivates you to continue to play at the high level at the age that you're at? Because it's really astonishing me viewing you from a distance.
Yeah, and I think you'll agree with me when I say this, but it's just the love of the game that takes over everything. You know, I enjoy coming to work. I enjoy the ups and downs. It hurts so good sometimes. You know, some mornings I wake up and you'll probably watch me walk into the gym, and like there's no way he's playing today. But it's just the love for the game. You're willing to do whatever until your body says that's enough. And, you know, I put a lot of work in the summer, and I know what it takes to be prepared. But at the same time, I can walk by a weight room throughout the day and say, I can do it later. But in the evening, reality hits and said, and it will say to me, let's get in gear and get prepared, because I'll never disrespect the game and just play the game just because I'm able to, but not put the work in. You know, I when I play the game, and that's why I've always said, going through a team, and some people's like, oh, you're going to this team, that team, when they feel I should play for someone else or whatnot. I prepare myself to play and play at a high level. And when I'm preparing myself to play, the mentality now at year 21 is the same as year 1, year 11, and so on and so forth, as far as preparing to play, being ready to play, and going to play. You know, just sitting there on the bench, I mean, if that's the case, I can sit at home on the couch.
All right, well, Vince, I want to ask you a little bit about the state of basketball today. It seems like the world is divided into two groups, those who are for an NBA super team and those who are against it. Before we get to some comments you made recently, where do you stand on super teams in the NBA? And obviously we're talking about the Golden State Warriors.
I mean, it is what it is. I mean, they didn't do anything wrong as far as, you know, the guys that they have. They did it within, you know, the rules. So what can we say? And it just makes it tough. I mean, when you go to Golden State, you know you have a game in your hand. You have to play a perfect basketball game to beat them. And they've just added a weapon in DeMarcus Cousins that's a little different than they had before. Another, he has the ability to shoot the three, but his ability to score in the post and draw double teams is just astonishing. He's one of the best big men, if not the best, as far as footwork and ability to score and demanding double teams. And now you have a decision to make. Do you play him one-on-one or do you double-team him and allow all of the great shooters they have to shoot the ball? So they've just upgraded, which is scary.
Vince, is it fair to the other 27 teams that, using your own words, that you would have to play a perfect game? Because that has never happened in your career before.
Right. I mean, fair. I mean, it's not fair, you know, as far as like, hey, you know, we can't compete with this, but it's just how it goes. I mean, we throughout the years, we looked at the shift. Back in the day, you can say the East was dominant. And you can just say, well, like when Shaq was in Orlando, and with that dominant team, and there's a bunch of dominant teams, the Knicks, when they were dominating, the Bulls, obviously, we would say that's unfair as well. Now, it's a different team. It doesn't have the caliber or the elite players that they have, but they were able to come together and make it happen. You know, with super teams, if you would, we've seen super teams formed over the years that have not worked, and nobody really didn't say anything. But on paper, you would absolutely say that's not fair. But it didn't work out. They are able to put a team like this together and make it work. So kudos to them, because it could, I mean, easily go the other way. And they don't work together. They don't play together. Everybody wants to be the go-to guy. And that's not the case. And that's tough to do. So you have to give them credit for putting a team like that together and making it work.
Vince, you said earlier this week that the era you're from, guys don't team up like this. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you that in no era have we ever seen a guy of Kevin Durant's caliber join a team that had won as many games or was already a champion. But across almost all eras, we've seen guys, respectfully, at your phase of their career, much closer to the end than the beginning, join on with the team that is the best chance to win a title. Why was that not attractive to you? I mean, I'm a huge Vince Carter fan. It's, and like, just, I was just going to say, like, not that you can't do it in Atlanta, but I'd love to see you win a ring. And so it was surprising to see you go to Atlanta. What went into that choice? Why is that your outlook?
Well, it's just something for me. It's not who I am. It's what's a part of me. Like, I want to play. You know, going to sit on the end of a bench or play 1 or 2 minutes every three games, every week, or whatever the case could or may be. I'm just not interested in that. And at the end of the day, I have a bigger picture. There's a lot of things that I want to do after the game is over. And I'm trying to prepare myself for that while playing this game. And broadcasting, obviously, is one of the things I want to do. My love and interest in music, being around that atmosphere. Atlanta brings so many things and the opportunity to play as well as help these young guys, because I'm very I'm excited every time I come to a team and I get the opportunity to help these young guys develop and grow teach them the game, the ups and downs, the goods and bads, and how to prepare while playing. You know, that's just what I want to do, and that's something I want to do. And I'm very appreciative of my fans and this constituents and all of the other folks that's out there that have their opinions on why they felt like it was a bad move or it's something about what I should do. But at the end of the day, it's something that makes me happy. Yeah. Playing on a team that has the ability where I'm not really contributing just doesn't sit well with me, you know, and that's just something I can't handle. And sure, obviously, you know, the goal of every athlete was when we step into our field, we want to play for that championship. And I'm not any different than anyone else, but the bigger picture for me is being able to compete, being on the floor, being able to help my team be prepared to play each and every night. And so, okay, so as of right now, there are teams that maybe we wouldn't even think make the playoffs, but it's all about the development that I enjoy in doing it that way.
Vince, we'd be remiss if we didn't ask you about the big NBA move of the summer, LeBron James, from Cleveland to L.A. to don the purple and gold. What'd you think of the move of LeBron to the Lakers this season?
I think it's I don't want to say it this way, but I think he's preparing himself for when his career is over. I mean, he has a lot of things going on in L.A. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's going there, but his team's probably not good for him. At the end of the day, he's happy. That's what it's all about, happiness. You want to be able to come to work every day, and you're excited about coming to work. I mean, Chris, I think in your career you can say maybe one or two times that you've gone to work not happy. It's like, man, I got to go to work today. I don't want that feeling. LeBron James does not want that feeling. He wants to come to work excited each and every day, whether they're on a 10-game winning streak or on a 10-game losing streak. So his decision makes him happy, and I'm all for it.
Yeah. Now, Vince, because of the length of your career, you've been very, very fortunate that there were days you came to work, mm-hmm. and on the other side of the court, there were players like Michael Jordan, your brother from North Carolina, players like Kobe Bryant, and then also recent greats, right. LeBron James. Give me one thing in our last question that you have learned from all three of those. MJ, which I'm always fighting, my brother over here, Nick, as far as the greatest player ever, Kobe, and mm-hmm. from LeBron.
Their passion, their love for the game, their ability to motivate, and they motivate in different ways. They encourage in different ways. And I think, you know, you just look at the greatness of them all. It is so tough to compare. And that's a situation that I'm a little skeptical of. I just, you know, they're all great in their eras. And there's always the what if. Obviously, LeBron and Kobe have played against each other. And you add the Michael Jordan factor, there's a what if. And I leave everyone with this. If you take these players and if you're able to put them in each of their eras in their prime, could they dominate in those times? You know, and as of right now, it's like, could Michael Jordan play in these times? And if he did, would he dominate? And when those people answer that question, yes or no, I think, you know, you can make your own decision. I think Michael Jordan would dominate in this era, because back when hand checking, and yes, I did play against Mike, and when there was a little more hand checking, it was a little more physical, he still was dominating, and we were considering the greatest then. Now, imagine with the game being like it is right now, that would be unfair.
Yeah. Thank you, Vince.
You made Chris's point. Vince, thank you so much. You bragged you were the first one at the gym. You're still literally the first one and only one at the gym. We're going to be watching the 2018 Junior NBA World Championships here on FS1. Good luck with all that. Much more First Things First right after this. Back here in First Things First, we're joined again by Super Bowl champ Chris Caney. Chris, thanks for hanging with us.
Appreciate you
guys. It feels like we were just recapping the Super Bowl, and now we are back into preseason football again. That was a quick little break from football, and now I'm happy to make all three of you happy.
I'm glad you feel that way.
It felt like forever.
Yeah. Awesome. Way to be on it, Jenna. Way to nail it.
Once an hour. Yeah. 7:17, now 8:18.
But I thought you were going to be like, thank you. That was third segment. You're right. You know what? Hey, let me try this again. Chris Caney's back with us. We're going to get right to some football. We're talking about one of your former teams, Caney, the Ravens. They drafted Lamar Jackson with the last pick of the first round this year. Officially, putting 11-year vet Joe Flacco on notice. Last night, Flacco tossed a touchdown pass in his only series. In the next series, Lamar comes in, immediately leads the Ravens on a 73-yard drive capped off by an impressive 9-yard touchdown run. What did you learn about Lamar Jackson last night, Chris Canty?
Well, I learned that he's a difference maker, and you saw some of the things in terms of movement skills, physical ability, athleticism that made Ozzie Newsome and the Baltimore Ravens front office decide to draft him in the first round. When you look at his impact on the offense, just being able to pose that threat to the defense, being able to run the football from the have a quarterback that can scramble, that can buy time, that puts so much more pressure on a defense.
Yeah.
If you're a defensive coordinator, you can't run any man coverage schemes because you can't have those guys running with their back turned because Lamar Jackson always poses the threat to break contain and pick up some yards with his legs. So that's the thing that you look at in terms of being able to have a quarterback that has that athleticism that Lamar Jackson possesses. But there's still some fine-tuning in terms of learning the quarterback position, right?
Yeah. So
the fundamentals of the position, being able to go through the progression, make the right decision, and get the ball to the receiver on time. Those are things that are going to come with time. Lamar Jackson is a project. We knew it wasn't a finished product coming out of Louisville, and that showed up as well.
A lot of times, too, it's about expectations. Nick and I were talking about expectations this morning. And after conversating with Ozzie Newsome and some of the staff there in Baltimore this weekend, they were at the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and seeing Lamar play in the first preseason game, that they're impressed with how much football he knows. They're impressed with his overall work ethic and how he comes to work every day. They're also impressed of what they see when he makes mistakes, because they see a guy that immediately corrects them, and they think that his arm is more than strong enough to be a good player. They do realize there's going to be some bad days. There's going to be some days where he is under 50% as far as completion percentage. But they like and are very, very pleased with what they see. But you just have to be patient. The one thing that I'm concerned about, I was on the field with him. He's a small guy, man. I mean, he is slightly built, and he's got a small frame. I'm talking about Russell Wilson's a small guy, but he doesn't have a small frame. He's thick through his body. His shoulders are wide.
Like Baker, right? A little thicker, even though he's
short. Yes, and he's not built like Michael Vick.
No.
He's built more like RG3.
Yes, that's the concern.
And Randall Cunningham, you know, not the height, but the frame. So that right there will be a concern of mine until he masters throwing the ball in the pocket.
That touchdown run we just showed, which was his big highlight of the day, because I think he's the only quarterback in the league that can make that exact play right now. As far as, I mean, he basically made two guys miss three separate times. It also was the scariest play to me, because the only thing I could pull in my memory to see a quarterback do that was Vic and RG3. And Vic had some injury issues. That's not what obviously derailed his career in Atlanta.
But
RG3, I mean, the problem is this. It only takes the one hit. And RG3 learned that, as you were talking about the other day with Haloti Ngata. Yeah. Like, it only takes one time.
Yes.
And you see right here, I'm going to make you miss. But sometimes
you get in there with that first-team defense, they're a little closer to you. They can breathe on you.
And I think Lamar caught a lot of unfair flack. People were wondering, are they even going to be able to understand what he's saying when he's calling the play? Like, he doesn't speak well. I think all that's nonsense. What's fair is the throwing stuff. Like, and the throwing stuff sounds like I'm minimizing it. I'm not. Like,
right.
He basically needs to improve every aspect of fundamentals when in regards to throwing the football. But the ability to force teams to play zone, the ability, I always think, is so much more demoralizing for a defense if a quarterback picks up a 3rd and 9 by you have guys covered, you have a good rush, and he still gets the first down with his legs. Like, that's, at least as a fan you're watching, you're like, you got to be kidding me, as opposed to regular completion. I think there are things he can do that are special, but you see how raw he is.
Mm-hmm.
You see why, despite being a Heisman Trophy winner with a year left in school, why he wasn't considered a top 10 pick, because he and Josh Allen are the two, for very different reasons, the
yes.
two first-round quarterbacks that are longer-term projects than Darnold, Rosen, and, of course, Baker.
So does that mean you guys can't see him starting this year in a Ravens uniform? Could
I
you
can
see him making
starting,
that kind of leap?
But I know the commitment from Ozzie and the organization. They're committed to him long-term.
Mm-hmm. So it's not a...
Yeah, I mean, Nick, he's the one schooled me as far as Flacco. All the guaranteed money after this year is going to be gone. So they're looking for that transition quarterback. And for them, they've made a decision. It's going to be Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, well, they've got some time, though, because they don't have to get rid of Joe Flacco after this season.
Yes.
So it all depends on how Lamar Jackson develops as the course of the season goes on. And I look at what he did last night, and I look at Baker Mayfield as well, and you try to compare the two, you can see that Baker, in terms of understanding the offense that Todd Haley wants to run and just the grasp of the concept, it's at a different level than where Lamar Jackson is with Marty Morningwig's offense. You can see some of the decision-making was a little bit questionable. That jump ball that he threw to Chris Moore, that was a big play, but that was double coverage. There was no need to make that play at that point in the game. Right. And so when you start talking about a young quarterback making those types of decisions, when you start getting to the regular season, I don't know that he's going to be somebody that you can rely on in terms of trusting his decision-making.
And the point that you made earlier about Baker, that once you go to Baker, you got to stick with him, that's true with all these rookie quarterbacks. Once you put him in, I feel it's a big mistake, unless they go in due to injury. Once you say you're my starter, it's a mistake to then jerk him out of the starting
lineup. Yeah, I think that sometimes, though, because they can bleed out on you, sometimes they get so bad.
Right.
That you have to be able to send the veteran. Right now in Baltimore, the best quarterback is Joe Flacco. But when people have a plan, sometimes that plan might be 2019, but if Flacco gets off to a bad start, I could see them running him in there 15 or 20 plays throughout the game to get him ready for which they consider to be next year. But shoot, that could be right now if they don't get off to a good start.
And the point when we were talking about Baker, and I'm sorry to bring him up again, but I think it's relevant in the comparison, the two rookie quarterbacks, is they weren't running any Oklahoma stuff. Were the Browns. Like, they were running all pro stuff. Some of these Lamar highlights yesterday, there's a read option.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's a quarterback keeper sweep around the outside.
Yeah.
Now, I get it. You want to utilize your player's skill set as best as you can, and he is an elite speed athlete. But, like, they are going to soft pedal some of this stuff as far as asking him to do all the concepts. And, as odd as this sounds, they got better weapons in Cleveland than he's dealing with right now in Baltimore. Like, they got a better offensive line.
Yeah.
I like their running back room better. I like their wide receiver room better. Like, that's the thing about Baltimore. I was hard on Flacco, and CeCe's point about the guaranteed money is every year since they've won the Super Bowl, it would have cost the Ravens more money to cut Flacco than to keep him.
Yep.
Like, it would have, and next year is the first year that the dead money hit is significantly lower or at all lower than his salary. That's why they actually have the ability starting next year to move on.
Just very quickly, these are two very different quarterbacks, Flacco and Lamar Jackson. So I would imagine you have very two different game plans going into it. Is it hard for them to create a completely different game plan for one than for the other, for everyone else besides the quarterback, Chris?
Well, yeah, it's hard for the Baltimore Ravens, but I think they'll have a specific package in mind week to week with Lamar Jackson. So they'll have about 5 to 10 plays that they'll be able to execute when he's out there on the field as the quarterback. But they put a lot of pressure on the opposing team's defense in terms of preparation, because if you got to prepare for an offense with Joe Flacco versus an offense with Lamar Jackson, it's a very different thing. And so I remember playing against mobile quarterbacks and just the preparation in terms of understanding the rush plan, the coverages that we're going to run during the course of the week. It's much tougher to prepare for a quarterback that poses a threat to be able to escape the pocket with his legs.
Yes, Jenna, but it's not volume for volume. We're not going to put in 100 plays of Lamar Jackson, 100 plays of Flacco. No, we're going to put in 75 plays, Flacco, and Lamar, we have 15, 25 plays and try to get him to perfect them so he can duplicate those plays and see them as many times as possible. Then he can perfect them compared to we're going to install two totally different offenses. No, because we don't have time. But good question.
All right, got to take a break. Chris, stick around. Coming up, Andrew Luck made his return last night, but was he the Andrew Luck of old? That's next. First things first. All right, let's move on from that. Chris! A lot of NFL eyes on Andrew Luck, who played his first game in 585 days last night. He tested that shoulder out. Colts, Seahawks. Luck came in, went 6 for 9, 64 passing yards. Most impressively, he left the game healthy. And here's what he had to say afterwards.
For a moment there, I was like, okay, how do I approach it? Especially as leading up to the game, trying to control my emotions, and I just sort of said, screw it, I'm going to go out. Whatever I want to think and I want to feel, I'm going to feel it and let that happen. And it was a little bit like pressure was off of me in a sense, and I really had fun. Like, I really enjoyed it. I mean, like I've told you guys earlier, I didn't quite know how much fun, if I would have this much fun again practicing football. And I didn't know if I'd have this much fun again playing football. And it's a preseason game, you know, I'm not going to overblow anything or blow anything out of proportion, but it's still a game and it's still a chance to go up against another color jersey, and it was a fun step along the way.
That is great perspective. You believe him. You believe that he's genuinely having fun getting ready to go out there and play in that preseason.
Yeah, that's an example. If Homer Simpson was going to be an NFL quarterback, that's what he would sound like.
Or Andre the Giant. Rest in peace, Mr. Giant.
I'm glad for a couple things, because I think because the significance of Andrew's injury and potentially being career-altering, that we're going to see a different guy or hear a different guy when we get sound bites, because I think we're going to get the real part. A lot of athletes are interviews, they're not real. We can't be real, you can't tell the truth. But I think that he saw that and he's like, I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to be nervous. His first practice he thought was like a game. And he's like, oh, I'm going to be reserved. And he's like most NFL quarterbacks. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm going to be out of control. I don't know how to do it. So I'm glad we're going to be able to see that. But at the top of his drop, when you watch the highlights, watch how quick he makes the decision. And that's the thing about Andrew Luck. It's not only his throwing talent, it's not only his beautiful throwing motion, but he makes decisions with the football. That's why he was in such high regard. So to be able to see that and not second-guessing what he's seen, I love to be able to see that, and he was on target with most of his throws.
What's the one thing that you did watch and see from Andrew Luck last night that I guess gave you some comfort, like, okay, he's back? Was it the patience? Was it the fact that he was able to read? Was it the fact that his timing was still there even after all that time off? Was there something that you said, okay, he just needs to, like, get the reps again?
Well, yeah, I looked at that one play where Quentin Jefferson was rushing from the defensive tackle spot for the Seattle Seahawks, and you got him off the spot, and Andrew Luck scrambled up, and then Bobby Wagner tackled him for a 2-yard gain. On that one, when he got hit and then he popped up, you could kind of see him in a sigh of relief, just saying, okay, I got the first hit behind.
Watch
me.
What he does, Kenty.
I'm not worried about it.
Watch what he does.
He's high-fiving one of his teammates. Yeah, I mean, that's what you're talking about. Listen, man, when you're facing your career mortality, you're worried about, okay, will the next hit be my last? But Andrew Luck, after that play happened, he's like, okay, now I can relax and I can go play football. Now, there was a little bit of rust. I saw one of the throws where he was off target a little bit. It was an out route throwing outside of the numbers. The ball was a little bit inside, but Frank Reich tried to do things, especially on the first drive, in terms of the quick game, get him into a rhythm, get him comfortable, and he seemed like he settled down as the game went on. He held the ball a little too long on one of the sacks. Mm-hmm. It was on a play action, but, I mean, overall, I think you have to look at it as a good outing for Andrew Luck. He got back to playing professional football, used to the speed of the game, so that's a positive.
And I want to talk about what he talked about afterwards, because this is now the second time this week we have heard him say not. He's never once said, I worried I wouldn't be able to play again. He has said, I worried I wouldn't have fun playing again. So if you can play, why would it stop being fun? Well, if you were great and you start to question, will I be great again? Not only would that not be fun, that could be torturous.
And we haven't seen a lot of situations where the players have been as good as Andrew Luck in any sport that would even have to face that question.
I think you've got to almost change sports to pull up. It's a Derrick Rose is what he was facing. Like, oh, I was the MVP.
Wow. At what age?
I was the youngest MVP in NBA history. And they had to change rules for me, the Rose rule, to where you can pay guys extra when they're this young, if they're that good. And then he blows out his knee and slowly came to the realization, you've seen Derrick Rose have to leave teams. You've seen Derrick Rose go AWOL because he has, he can't deal with
it. He had it. And lost it.
I don't hold it against him. I'm not criticizing.
Right.
That would be
hard to deal with.
Imagine the thing you take the single most pride in the world, not being taken from you, but you used to be great, and now you're average. That would almost be worse than it being taken from you entirely, because you're still doing it, but not really. That's what it seemed to me like Luck was worried about. Not I wouldn't be able to play, but am I still going to be me, the guy I was made out to be? And so when he's saying I'm having fun, that speaks to me that he believes, oh, I'm back. Like, I'm actually the guy I've been before. I'm back.
When you look at Andrew Luck, you go through a series of boxes that I'm sure he wants to check off. The one of them is getting hit. Let me get hit for the first time and check off that box. Give me what the other couple boxes are as he now goes through the preseason.
One, you want to have some success. You want to be able to throw the ball where you're directing it. And as Canty pointed out, even in some of the bad plays, you see, oh, man, interior offensive lineman breaking down. It's a short gain. I didn't get sacked, but 2 yards. Just reacting in game time, real time, and just being in touch with your emotions. I think that's very, very important. Them getting some positive as far as scoring drives, being able to put the ball in the end zone, being touchdowns or field goals, those are the type of things, because that's going to generate confidence around the other, because he doesn't have the type of talent around him that early in his career that he had as far as weapons. T.Y. Hilton's the only quality wide receiver that he does have. So that right there, as far as being a force multiplier, you want to see that happening. So guys seeing him and having him having success, I believe that trickles down to the rest of the team, Chris.
No, you're hitting the nail on the head. That's exactly right. It's a progression. And so the first thing is just to go out there and get a feel for the game. The next step is, okay, let's put together a couple of scoring drives.
Right.
And as the preseason goes on, I think we'll get closer to seeing the Andrew Luck that was able to carry his team to the AFC Championship game, because that's ultimately what he's going to have to do playing in that AFC South. That's a tough division. There's no easy opponent down there. So if you're going to be competing with those guys, Andrew Luck is going to have to make a lot of plays for this team, because they just don't have the requisite talent that all those other teams in that division do.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.